Hi, I'm Dan Benjamin. I'm the founder of 5x5. And before we start today's show, I just wanted to take a minute to say thanks to all of you for helping make 5x5 what it is today, for helping me get the best job in the entire world. You guys have rated the show on iTunes. You've checked out our sponsors every week. And I just wanted to say thanks and thank you for listening. I'd like to say a great big thanks, though, to all of you who've donated your hard-earned money to help us out here with the big move from Central Florida to Austin, Texas, which is where we are now. If you'd like to help support 5x5, you can do that by going to 5x5.tv/donate. And thanks. This is the Big Web Show, featuring special guests and topics like web publishing, art direction, content strategy, typography, web technology, and more. It's everything web that matters. This show is hosted by the godfather of the web, the creator of the internet, Jeffrey Zeldman, and by me, I'm Dan Benjamin. This episode is sponsored by the Omni Group, makers of productivity applications exclusively for Mac, iPhone, and iPad. They're known for their awesome software, gold standard customer support, and palpable geekery. You should check out one of my favorite Omni Group apps. It's called OmniFocus. It's designed to quickly capture your thoughts and allow you to store, manage, and process them into actionable to-do items. It's perfect for getting things done systems, but really flexible enough for any task management style. You can go to omnigroup.com or just search for OmniFocus in the Mac App Store or in the iTunes Store. We'd also like to say thanks to Simplecasts, the easiest way to enjoy your favorite podcasts on your iPhone. Now, this app usually sells for $2.99, but there's a special deal for 5x5 listeners. It'll be on sale from Monday to Sunday, June 20th to 26th, 2011, for only $1.99. And it features a straightforward, easy-to-use interface. It doesn't require a PhD in computer science to operate it. Great features like continuous playback, intelligent defaults. You really need to check it out, especially for shows like this where we have a lot of inline show notes. So you can go to the iTunes Store and search for Simplecasts. And check it out today. So it's been 3 weeks. Why has it been 3 weeks since we last recorded?
Well,
it's my fault, mainly.
Well, you moved. So what's going on with your Austin move?
I moved. We are in the process of, well, first we were going to rent, and then we got a load of the Austin rental market for houses, which is not very good. So we said, you know what, we could just buy, and we could actually do better, much better buying, which, you know, we've been homeowners for decades anyway, so it just makes more sense for us. So then we went on that, and the first house that we wanted to buy didn't work out. Long story short, there were details that made it an unacceptable property after the title company got through.
Indian burial grounds. So,
it's like that. It was very much like, it was the same concept. But then back to the drawing board.
The house in Rushmore that's right next to the funeral home.
It was almost that nice. So then we did find another house that we love, and you know, finally got that under contract. And so the house hunting thing, knock on wood, may actually be over. Which means,
but it's June,
and it may be July before we actually are in there.
So are your family living in a car? I mean, what's the story?
Well, my wife and son are in the car, and there's a large box outside of the car. I like to keep an eye on things at night.
You do have a place to live, though, correct?
Yeah, so we are finally have a place. Second place to live that we'll be moving from the first place into the second place for the new closing date. And you know, this is the kind of boring stuff.
And I'm at Happy Cog in New York, same as always.
Yeah.
And you're broadcasting out of a co-working space in Austin called Austin Tech?
Tech Ranch Austin. And Tech Ranch. And they have, it's like a co-working space where you can also get private office space. And I have one of the private offices in which to record for the next month. And then I'm going to find something else. So we're now looking for offices.
Is it all white and Stanley Kubricky like Studio Mates in Brooklyn?
No. It looks like, if you've ever seen the movie Office Space, it looks like that, except not as official. No. You know, there's cubes, there's conference rooms, it's in cool decorations. It's a neat place. It's a fun place. A lot of cool people in here hacking, working, and sharing ideas.
Yeah, I immediately flashed on like all my favorite dialogue from Office Space. That is such a great movie.
It's not really like that, but I love that movie. I wish it was like that, but it isn't. What about you? You're in happy. You're, not, you're safely ensconced.
You're not going to quit the web and start doing construction work.
No, but the walls are that thin.
Okay.
And you're safe. You're safe and secure back in New York City.
I'm back in New York City, right? But I've been to London. I've been to France.
Nuts. How do you do that?
Well, you get on an airplane, and it's nice. British Airways, very nice. British Airways, it's interesting. It's like a trick. Like British Airways from New York to England, it's incredibly nice, and it's so comfortable. The seat is amazing. It's huge, and you sit. You can almost recline, and that's not first class. You can almost recline, and you have all this like live movies, and everyone's super nice. If they say they'll do something for you, they always remember. It's like the opposite of most life experiences, right? It's really nice, and everyone's very thoughtful. But then once you're in the country, like if you're flying to another part of the country, you're kind of, it's like you're British, and you just, you know, stand in a long queue and then put up with a ratty old plane. I was on a plane where it was like a 50-year-old plane going up to Newcastle, and it was like the coach, like my legs, I'm a short guy, and my legs, there was no leg room for me in coach. And like the little slip seat pocket where you put the magazines, they slipped through onto the floor because the seat pocket was ripped. And then the stewardess would come by and say, "You have to pick those up before we take off." And then you put them in the slot and they fall down. And says, "You have to pick those up. I told you." So on the way there, getting you into the country, they're like, "Please, can we bring you some, oh, no champagne for you today? Well, a roast suckling pig, perhaps." I mean, they're trying to make you. And then once you're there, it's just like, you know, the war's on, and, you know, mustn't grumble.
So, it almost sounds like you'd be better off, rather than flying from one part of the UK to another, to actually fly back and forth to America.
I think that would be the best. Yeah, that would be absolutely be the best. Also, I caught up on my Adam Sandler movies, because I only really watch those when I'm stuck on an airplane.
That's the only time anybody would watch one of those things. What are you watching? Waterboy or Mr. Deeds or what?
It was. Did it have a name? It was called Just Go With It.
Okay. Is that a real movie?
It is. There's really no need to discuss this further. I like Adam Sandler when he's in the more experimental, edgy stuff, you know. My favorite Ben Stiller movie is the one, Permanent Midnight, where he plays a junkie. So I always like those. And I like, you know, if I'm going to see Gary Oldman, I like him in a musical.
So you also did an event apart.
We did. So I did the Dibby conference in Newcastle, England, which was amazing and lovely and wonderful speakers and just really well done. And then we came to do, basically I did a week in Atlanta in Buckhead is so named because the farmer who used to own that land put the head of a steer on a stick. And people got used to saying, "Well, you turn left at the Buckhead." So,
is that true?
So that's how it got named. And you'd love this place. It's all the food was farm to table.
Oh wow!
You know, the first time I went to Atlanta, we stayed downtown in like a second Best Western, and we ate at Aunt Pity Pat's. It'd be like going to New York and going to Mama Leone's, right?
Right.
It was terrible, and I just thought, wow, there's nothing in this town. How sad. And that was a very, very false impression. But it was my experience. I mean, if you could come to New York, stay on 11th Avenue in some dump, and go to the Javits Center and think, wow, what a horrible city. And you'd be right. But you'd only be right for that part of
that
it.
That was my first visit to New York. You just described it. As an adult.
People come to tech conferences, and they're held in weird neighborhoods sometimes. And, that's a horrible experience.
I showed up. I went into the hotel, and the alarm went off at 6 in the morning. I went to the Javits Center, and I gave my talk, and I got an airplane lift.
Yeah, I tell people that they haven't experienced New York. I mean, seriously, that's like going to Heathrow and thinking you've been to England.
My second visit, I went with like a local, and they showed me around.
Nice.
Felt different.
You got to do that. You got to do that. My first web speech, right? I went from not speaking at all to giving a keynote at a Turkish conference in Istanbul. And I'd been in Canada, but I hadn't been out of the U.S. except for Canada my whole sheltered life. So all of a sudden, I was going to a European country, which is at the edge of Asia. An amazing, amazing place. And I had to give a talk where half the people had headphones because they were listening to translators. And I spent 2 weeks there. It was amazing. And then I knew I could speak anywhere. Right, because if you know
that trial, talk about trial by fire. That's it.
It's like they tried to teach me to swim by throwing me in, but I was too scared. If I'd just swum, I would have been a great swimmer at like age 8. But I was like, I basically decided that I was drowning, and you know. But it was like that. It was like you just go, okay, I can do this, and then you do it. Do you speak? You don't really speak publicly, Dan.
I'm speaking publicly right now.
So you're mostly you've been until this point kind of a behind the scenes guy, though.
Well, no, I mean, no? I've spoken at a handful of conferences. I spoke at the RailsConf a few times, in both times I think in Portland. There's been a couple of smaller Orlando conferences I spoke at. I spoke at Linux World way back in the day.
Linux World.
Yeah. I've never spoken at an event apart, though.
I've never heard you speak. That's one reason why.
I'm pretty good, pretty dynamic, pretty amazing. I can fill a room.
Can you?
Oh, yeah. The fire marshal had to bust it out last time I spoke.
I completely believe that. Well, I've always wondered why. Well, now that you're in Austin, you'll be going to South by Southwest.
Oh, yeah. Finally, I can go.
See, other people come from like Australia to go to that show.
I know. Isn't that crazy? Now I just come from my house.
Yeah. You'd be like, oh, the bus is on an alternate schedule. I can't go.
Right, I can't go this year. Maybe next year.
Go this year. Maybe next year. Yeah.
Right, the train is running at an off time. Couldn't make it.
Couldn't make it. The light rail. They have a slight delay on the light rail. I can't come in.
Right.
You have to buy a house across from the Hilton.
I'll look into it.
What part of Austin are you looking at? And what's the tech scene like there?
Tech scene is so good. It's the tech scene is great. It's better than anywhere. Now, I've never lived in in a place like New York City, but I've been there, and I've spent quite a bit of time going back and forth to San Francisco when I was a CTO for a San Francisco-based company a few years ago. This is the most like a San Francisco kind of vibe as far as like the tech scene and creative scene and what people are doing that I've ever seen. And there's a big part of why I wanted to come here is because of that. And it's a great town. It's a great city. And, being the fact that I have a family, I mean, of course, there are people who live in, live in the downtown area with kids. We kind of wanted to be, a bit more out, a bit more in the suburb for that reason. But, really where we're going to be living is only 15 to 20 minutes outside of what you would consider to be downtown. So it's a fairly good location. There's a lot of places to live. That's the thing, is you really have your choice here. You can live in something that's very urban, or you can drive out 15 minutes and you're like in hill country that looks just like, California or out west. It's great. They have scorpions here.
Yeah.
I haven't seen one, but they have them.
How's the boy liking Texas?
Oh, for him, I don't know that he knows we're here. He talks about it all the time. And there's so many great things to do. So I think for him, it's, they have a lot of the same kinds of activities. The weather feels similar, much less humid, much less humid. And this is something I just wanted to check in, because there were a lot of people who were, when they heard that I was coming here from Florida, they were saying, oh, it's hotter out here. Well, it is hotter. It is hotter, consistently 5 to 10 degrees hotter, but it feels cooler. Because it's such dry. Low humidity. It's great. It's like it'll be 95. I'll be like outside walking around. I'm not, I'm comfortable.
Yeah, it's going to be between 95 and 100 when we do our, dare I make that announcement?
Oh, what?
We're going to do an event apart in Austin next year.
What?
Yeah, of course.
This is perfect.
Yeah, well, you moved out there. I mean, it's the least we could do.
Oh, this is great because I've wanted to go to one of these things forever.
Yeah, and now you won't.
I won't have to get on a plane
or take a short train trip or drive for an hour. You can actually drive
just
for 15 minutes.
I'll walk.
You can walk. You can take your bike. It'll be fantastic. I love
this. This is a huge announcement. So this is, what are the details?
I can't give the date yet, but it's July, June, July.
Okay. So just come? 1 year till we can finally be in the same room.
Yeah, because we've never met.
No. Everybody that you know is, I also know and have met.
You haven't even met Gruber?
Yeah, I met John. We hung out.
Were you in Philadelphia? Did you go to his house?
No, we were in San Francisco. I think it was for WWDC, and we were both there. I wasn't there for WWDC. I was there for work and timed a trip so that I would be there overlapping WWDC so I get to hang out with friends.
What Apple rumors have you heard lately that are interesting? Like,
well, there's the one rumor is that that we will see the iPhone for sure in September. There are still these rumors of an iPad 3 that are going. It's going to be 1.5 times the resolution, which seems odd. There's all kinds of things that are out there, and I don't put much stock in any of them.
What about the lower cost iPhone 4 type device for the rest of the world to compete with Android?
Yeah, I've heard that one, but I haven't heard anything I would say is credible about it. I just want to know if you still see those frogs when you open up folders on your Mac.
No, that went away. That went away.
That was the best.
You know what happened though last night?
Oh no.
So when I left my office, apparently I had to look at a spreadsheet for a second, and it used to be easy to just tell your Mac what app you wanted to open things in. There used to be a way to set a default setting. So you could just say, and you can still do it. It's just like harder to think of, harder to find, harder to remember. But you'd say, always open Excel spreadsheets in Numbers. You could have said, but I've never bothered to do that. So, when you don't use Microsoft products that often, what always happens is that they open and immediately tell you that there's an updated version. It's about 200 megabytes. Would you like to install it? And you always hit yes and then forget about it.
Yeah.
And you go back to work with the rest of what you're doing. So apparently, in order for it to update, it needed me to shut something. I don't know what, Safari or something, but I didn't even notice. It's on in the background. I leave work. And apparently this dialog box was open on my desk all night. And for some reason, that prevented the screensaver from kicking in. So I had burn-in when I got here this morning.
Really?
I saw this. Yeah. Not this morning. I was at my kid's school this morning. But, so that was kind of sad. Anyway, I spoke at the New York Times yesterday. That was fun.
Really? What was going on over there? What happened?
They asked me to speak. And I gave what I thought was a completely incoherent talk about content on the web and starting from content. I think what we do now, we start with the IT department has requirements, like, and the committees have requirements, and all that stuff comes first, and then we design and we do templates, and then at the very end, so we have a CMS. Like, what can the CMS do? What fantasy does the committee think the website should do because their competitors do this, or they liked it on Facebook or whatever reason? What are the guy in the back who's worried about losing his job? He's got 5 more years to try to keep .NET running. So he doesn't really want to hear about a LAMP stack and open source. He wants to, hire someone that's going to work with .NET. And, there's all this junk that happens. It's got nothing to do with the user and nothing to do with the content. And then at the very end, someone's responsible for the content, but we don't really know who it is. And the content might or might not fit the system that you've designed, right? Whereas what we ought to be doing is starting with the content and doing user experience strategy and content strategy first, then doing design, and then building what we've designed, right? That makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
When we do our own products, that's what we do. But when we're doing client products, we don't do that. So that's basically what I was talking to them about. It was a little strange because the New York Times is one of the best run and best designed websites in the world. And so it was a little bit like, I don't know, I felt like I was I was selling plastic surgery to George Clooney. It's like, selling dentistry to George Clooney. Hey, how do you like a white, charming smile? And the guy's like, yeah, I guess that would be good if I didn't have one.
They brought you in for this, though.
They brought me in, so they wanted to
do
that.
Did they cater that when you're in there? Do they have?
They had some cookies.
That's it?
Well, it's the newspaper's under siege, my friend.
Yeah.
Newspapers are under siege. I'm glad they were there. They showed me the whole place. I saw there was a not a gremlin. What are the creatures that are on old buildings?
Chupacabra.
Gargoyles, correct. It was a gargoyle from the original Times building. You know, the building they named Times Square after, the New York Times building from 150 years ago that gave Times Square its name. Hmm. That building still exists, but it's now, I don't know, it's owned by Yashica or somebody. Hmm. But that old building had these gargoyles, and when they sold the building, someone stole all the outer build. Someone stole the gargoyles from the building.
Oh, come on.
It's true. And someone, they managed to save one, and it was in the office of the really nice, cool woman who helped me put the, you know, helped me with the presentation. And I met the assistant to the, just another second in command.
To the regional manager.
No. The second in command of the New York Times, because the first in command was off somewhere. Hmm. And I saw the newsroom, and it was amazing.
People on the desks typing, just like you would imagine?
Yeah. It was like you imagine. It's an amazing building. It's a new building, and it's like their third headquarters building. I took a picture of it. If you look upward at it, it looks like a newspaper being printed.
Oh, wow.
It's pretty nice. It's on Flickr. Flickr.com. So that was fun, but I felt... as I often do these days, I felt like I was ill-prepared, giving an incoherent talk that made a lot of interesting points that didn't connect to each other. And then when I was done, everyone said that was great, and please come give us this talk again. It was fantastic. So I don't know. I'm very critical of my own presentations these days because I co-founded an event apart, and I get to hear, you know, people like Jared Spool and Luke Grabluski, Ethan Marcotte, and
you don't put yourself in that league. I do.
They're pretty. I think they're better. Well, I don't know.
That's the eye of the tiger talking.
I don't know what that means.
You know, Rocky had the eye of the tiger, and then he lost it. And that meant he wasn't hungry anymore. He didn't need to win. He didn't feel like he had to win. He didn't have that. And Mickey helped him get it back. He got it back, and he had the hunger. He wanted to live. He wanted to win. You know, he wanted to win again. And if you're not, you know, if you don't have that, if you're not hungry, if you don't feel like you could be doing way better than you're doing, you should be scared.
Good, I'll take that. Yes, you should not be happy with your own design or your own presentations. That's all true. But I also think, I mean, I think that I make some of the same points Jeremy Keith does, only it's much more impressive when he does it. And he's Irish. That's definitely part of it.
Do you think the Irish accent is as impressive to Irish people as it is to Americans?
I don't know, but it sure works for me. It's just, it's very subtle. I mean, because he's been living in England for a long time. So it's subtle, but it's just, I don't know, it's warm. There's something just charming about it. It's just amazing. You know, we have Sarah Parmenter, who's got one of the 300 different English accents, and she's amazing. And it's just like, pop, blah. I don't know. There's just something
very
about...
Very proper and chipper. Happy.
There's just... Well, she's been on the show. You know what she sounds like. It's just amazing.
It's a great accent.
It is. You could... well, I'm not going to go there, but it is a great accent. Yeah, it's a lovely accent.
So you do this event apart thing, you drop back in, you're traveling all the while, and you come up with an idea, maybe a topic even, if for the show.
For the New York Times, sure.
No, for this show.
Oh, you think I was doing that?
I know that when you're sitting there on the plane, most of the time you're spending, you know, coming up with ideas for the show.
I know that we're going to interview Deuce. But
we are, yeah.
And Jen.
Yeah.
And Merlin.
Yeah, he'll be here.
But right now they're just stuck with the two of us. So.
Yeah, but you had an idea. You came up with something.
I was talking, yeah.
Small teams.
Small teams in communication. Communication in far flung, you know, with far partners near and far flung.
Because this is the way you operate. For people who don't know, Happy Cog, are you Happy Cog East?
No. So
how does that work?
Happy Cog has three offices. There's Happy Cog West, which was in San Francisco, but is moving to Austin.
Yeah.
As you know. And Happy Cog East, located in Philadelphia.
Right. That's East. And, okay.
And then there's Happy Cog New York, which is me, where I'm speaking to you from right now. They all operate slightly differently. Greg Story runs West, and he runs it the proper way, as a man of his stature would run things. And Greg Hoy runs Happy Cog East, and he does the same there. And they're amazing guys. I'm very lucky. And we do phenomenal work, but it's different. Like, there's Happy Cog West is a partly distributed team and partly in-house. Everyone will be in-house in Austin. Everyone's moving. But up until now, it's been a distributed team. Happy Cog New York has always been freelancers and distributed. And Happy Cog East in Philadelphia has always been this amazing family-like staff, this like really tight group of people in this amazing, wonderful office space. So that's that. So for instance.
And why is yours called Happy Cog New York and then there's an East and a West? Why, you know what I'm saying? Like,
so they're all called Happy Cog.
But then why not call one Happy Cog Philadelphia instead of East? Like, you would think that New York is more East than Philadelphia. Isn't that on the map?
Mm. Well, we really just call them Happy Cog.
All right.
These are just internal names. Like Copeland was an internal name for System 8.
Right.
Right?
Sure.
Wasn't it? Or was Copeland the name for the failed prototype of OS X that before Steve Jobs came back to the company? I forget what Copeland was. Was it the operating system they were going to come out with and then didn't?
You're talking about the the Copeland code name.
Yeah, but it was a code name for something.
Within Apple.
Within Apple, yeah. Sure. When Guy Roquefort Dressing was running that thing. Was the guy's name the guy they brought from Coke or Pepsi?
Yeah, the Pepsi guy, the soda water guy.
The soda water guy. What's going to happen with Steve Jobs?
I think he's all right.
You do?
Yeah, I think he'll be okay. I think he's trying to set it up so that it's not critical that he be in the company anymore. I mean, he's in it. He's in it, but I think he wants it to. I think he wants to mix that up. I don't think he wants to be the guy that. He'll always be the guy that was the founder of Apple and the guy people associate with it. But I think he wants to show that the company can run without him. He has to be able to show that.
So I think it can. I'm doing the same thing. But so, for instance, you asked about distributed teams. Like, Jason Mandy and I run A Book Apart as equal partners, but we don't work out of the same office, right? But Jason and Mandy are in the same office, and I'm in a different office. So that's a little harder to manage, as you can imagine, because when all three of you are in the same room, you're going to sit down and go, well, here's what I'm working on. What do you guys think? When two of you are in the same room, the same thing happens. So I had to get like one of those teddy bears that keeps an eye on the nanny, right, with the hidden cameras and put it
in.
Did
you really do that? You didn't do that.
Yeah, I did. I brought it to studio mates and put it on their desk. I told Mandy it was a birthday present.
That's weird.
But it's giving me constant feedback.
Are you making this up?
She's not a real teddy bear type person, so it wasn't the best choice. But
how do you do that? How do you do that? Why do it that way? You're in an office. You go into an office every day, or most days.
I didn't do that.
But no, I mean, really, why not? Why not have an office? Why not set it up? Especially because people are all sort of in New York.
They live in Brooklyn. They like working out of Brooklyn.
And
there is an office.
And you're in Manhattan proper.
They could work here. But it makes sense. They like riding their bikes to their, you know.
How far is that from Brooklyn to Manhattan proper?
It's not that far.
Like time-wise?
Yeah, 30 minutes to an hour on the trains, depending.
Really?
Yeah.
Might as well not even be called New York then.
That's my point.
Yeah.
To me, if you're going to be an hour out of Manhattan, you might as well...
Might as well be a plane right away. Might as well live here.
You might as well live in Connecticut.
Yeah.
In Westport.
That's what Letterman does.
With a big house. Exactly. Right. So his commute might be the same as someone from Brooklyn's.
That's weird. Why would you even live in Brooklyn?
So the point is people are setting up space in Dumbo. So instead of commuting, they go to Dumbo and it's like in Brooklyn and it's awesome. And they can look at Manhattan and go, but that's why I got the teddy bear.
So you're in a shared somewhat of a co-working space too.
It's not a co-working space because it's own office, but I share an office with Roger Black and Roger Black Studios. They have their own space here. And then Nomad Editions has a space here. And Danilo Black has a space here, so I guess it sounds like it, but we don't all sit in the same big room. We all have our own private rooms, so it's different. We all have our own little sections.
Now, why do that and not work from home as you did for many, many years? And I remember the picture vividly. I wish I could find it because it was a source of inspiration. Seeing your little... your little apartment that you had for all those years with your desk there. And you worked from home for many, 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 many years. Worked from home with great success. Why change? Why leave the house and go to an office?
It enabled the company to grow. There were things I couldn't achieve with a pure distributed team. And there were things I couldn't achieve if I couldn't have clients come over and play handball in the space.
Right.
There's something about having space that you can invite clients to.
Does the space need to be something you're proud of then to do that? I mean, you wouldn't want to invite them over if you're like subletting a little back corner of a butcher shop or something.
This is a nice space.
Yeah. So that's part of it, right?
Right. And I got, My accountant told me you need to spend money. So I went to what is it? Furniture out of reach? Design that's completely out of reach? No, Design Within Reach. You know that store?
That's not a store I'm familiar with. It sounds great.
Design Within Reach, they basically, how can I explain this? If you're not familiar, they get the greatest designs, the greatest furniture designs and clocks and desks and tables and things of the past 50 years, 75 years, like a lot of mid-century stuff, right? Like Eames stuff. And they have it made new by an authorized company, by a company that actually originally manufactured it. But instead of spending $100,000 for the desk, or as you would if you were a museum, you spend $5,000 for the desk. It's just a desk. So it's kind of ridiculous, but clients feel that there's like, that they're in a very nicely designed space.
And sure.
So, and then, get lots of iMacs and all that, and then they feel as happy as you do. So I really like sitting at this big desk, and we wouldn't want to have this in an apartment. You really want this, I'm up here on the 23rd floor looking out at the New York Life Building. An architectural masterpiece with a gold crown, and it's only it's maybe 10 stories taller than this building. And there's just this big sweep through the windows looking all the way to the East River. And, I get to work, rub shoulders with my colleagues and also with the colleagues from the other companies. Being in the same office as Roger Black is pretty amazing, right? Because he's a brilliant guy. And, like he's, a one of a kind and an innovator. So, yeah, it's pretty fantastic. So that's why I do that. And, of course, the reason we have offices in Philly and Austin is because we have dedicated teams of people who work on the same projects day in and day out and are constantly rubbing shoulders with each other.
It sounds like a great setup, but is that more important than for the client part? I mean, how about you as a person? You as going in, is there something important for you that when you leave, like you have the act of leaving, you have the act of And I'm guessing in your case, it's you're just walking a number of blocks because you're in New York City and can do that.
Right.
Is there that is that transition important for you and make you more effective?
I mean, I'm usually going to, like I'm often going to pick up my daughter at school. So I leave and I sort of leave work behind me, at least for a while. I mean, I'll check in again later. I can't help but look at my iPhone and see if there's, I mean, there's the conference, there's the agency, there's lots of stuff going on. There's the magazine, and I have to make sure that like nothing's burst into flames or that I haven't forgotten that I was meeting somebody, you know, so I do check, but, I do feel like when I walk away from the office, I walk away from, and I feel, and when I work from home, it's kind of like when I work on a laptop. It's not as casual as when I work on an iPad, but it's, when I work from home, I feel like I'm not completely worked. Now, I used to work really hard, like 18 hours a day from home, and I was, you know, it was terrible in a way. I mean, I would roll out of bed, light a cigarette, and start working. That was what I did. So that was really no life, but it, you know, it enabled me to get to a certain level of expertise or experience, and I accrue that. And you know, I got so now you know my daughter is very important, and there's a certain. It's kind of nice to walk away from the office and you know, sort of detach and get ready to meet my kid. And when I work from home, it's like kind of like you know, again when I work with the like working on a laptop from your hotel, there's a certain kind of work you're going to do. Like you're going to answer your email and stuff, but you're not going to really design anything. You're not going to really take on some huge challenge. You might have a creative challenge, an emotional challenge. You might have to deal with a personnel problem or something, but you're not going to, you're not going to do like, I'm not going to do really hardcore anything on a laptop. And now I feel when I work at home, it's more like that, but I'm just sort of in maintenance mode. And it's also a good place to write blog posts.
Right.
Home is a great place for that. Nobody's bothering me. I am totally alone with my thoughts and I can get something done, usually early in the morning. You're an early riser too, right?
Oh yeah, very, incredibly early. Really crazy. But I don't set an alarm. Do you try? Do you do that on purpose? Do you wake up early and do that?
I wake up before the alarm goes off.
Yeah. You ever overslept? Ever slept through an alarm?
I once almost missed my plane to South by Southwest by oversleeping. Was it South by Southwest or was it a different convert? I woke up and I had something like 45 minutes to get to the airport. And that was before 9/11. So you could still kind of run onto a plane at the last minute back then. I mean, now they wouldn't even let you in.
No.
Where was it? It was a conference in New Orleans. It's also pre-Katrina. Man, all the things that, you know, was before this tragedy and that tragedy. Now, seeing that's how I know I'm getting old. Right? Well, before the Holocaust, here's what happened. It was before all those things when you could just, New Orleans, all you thought about was, what a fun town. And I had the flu and I'd like overslept. Somehow the cab got me to JFK or maybe LaGuardia. Anyway, it doesn't matter. And they left me at the wrong terminal. And I was literally running from like Terminal 5 to Terminal 7, just like running with my suitcase and sweating. And I was really sick. I got on the plane. Like they were about to close the doors, I ran on all red faced, sweaty, and so yeah, that's not an experience I want to repeat. So, I set multiple alarms now, and I crumple up newspaper and leave it outside the bed in case someone comes in the night.
In your hotel?
Everywhere.
Do you really?
No.
I can see you doing that.
You're very gullible today.
Well, I can imagine it. I mean, the way you describe it, it sounds real.
That coffee mug I sent you, that wasn't just a present. It's a camera.
I actually wish you had sent me a Happy Cog coffee mug.
We don't make coffee mugs.
I know.
You know what I'm really liking? I'm really liking the Pantone coffee mugs.
Oh, I saw those. Those look so good. They're designery. Really
nice. I have no idea who gave them to me.
Do you have them all? You have the whole set?
I do. They're fantastic. I got rid of my clown mugs. Once I got the, I didn't get rid of them. I put them on
John Wayne
shelf.
Gacy clown mugs or what kind of clown mugs?
Yeah, exactly.
Like your own reproduction of those or an original?
The paintings of John Wayne Gacy I had turned into coffee mugs.
So you're there in New York. You're basically running an empire now.
How much
of Happy Cog these days do you feel? I mean, there's so much great work. All of Happy Cog as a whole produces such great work. I remember when you were really kicking this up a notch. We had a conversation, and I'm paraphrasing, but you said something to the effect of and this is probably going to be, I'm remembering it wrong, and this is not exactly what you said, but the sentiment was, I know so many people that have come up with, you know, along with me as the very first people who built these great things on the web, and there have been so many successes and failures, but I'm looking around and I see so many people who have had these great successes. And I feel like that, was that an inspiration for you to know, because you came up in this first, you're the first generation of the people who are really doing the first real innovative work on the web. And now you can look at the body of your work and the empire upon which you sit, and you can say, wow, he's done all of these really great things. He's the one that did this, and he did this, and he did this.
You can't fake that, baby.
But that's the thing. So today, when you look around, are you satisfied with what you've accomplished? Do you feel like you're in the place that you should be, or do you still at the end of the day say, you know, where are my .com millions?
Oh no, I don't say where are my .com millions. I wonder where's my Pulitzer Prize. I'm a very happy person, and I feel very lucky and blessed, and I have a great kid, and I get to do a lot of creative things that I enjoy doing with people who are absolutely brilliant. And I'm comfortable. I'm not rich, but I'm comfortable. I'm becoming comfortable, and that's nice. It's like I don't worry so much about eating out of garbage cans. Like I mean, I used to assume I was going to be eating out of garbage cans, right? I always just earned just enough to pay my rent and pay for my cigarettes, and that's all I.
What more does the young boy need, though?
And now, you know, all that seems like, so, you know, that's the past. And, I mean, I'm getting divorced, so you need a lot more because it's like you're basically paying for two families now, which is what I'm doing. So, but it's okay because I can earn it. And I don't know, the thing that makes me feel gratified is people coming up to me that, like that read Designing with Web Standards, and it made them really love web design again, or made them rethink, or made them stay in the business when they were going to leave, or something like that. That's what makes me think, you know, that's what I feel special about.
It sounds like at that point in your career where you're not just thinking about what project am I going to get next, or how am I going to pay these bills, or what does the next 6 months look like, as opposed to what can I do that actually matters?
Yeah, well, I mean, there are people at Happy Cog who are, I am worried about that always, but not that I've offloaded a lot of that worry onto the strong, burly shoulders of others who really worry about that on a daily basis, so that I can think about, where's the web going? Does everyone know what they need to know? Is there some way to find out what's next and to help people prepare for it? I do feel like that's important, and that seems to be one reason I'm here, and I like that. I'm happy with that. You know, I met Linda from lynda.com a long time ago, and I was just blown away to meet her, right? Because she was the source of all knowledge in web design, right? Linda Weinman with her books.
Yeah.
You remember.
Yep.
And I mean, she's still going, so she's an amazing brand. She's still going strong. She's great. We should really have her on the show. But I know what it feels like to be, it feels kind of like like a teacher, I guess, and not a very coherent one, but it seems like, you know, it's like that kind of reward, the feeling like you've touched lives and in some way and made a tiny, small but nice difference in someone's life. And that's my reward. It's really a fantastic reward. You can't really get better than that, you know. Watch It's a Wonderful Life. I bet you haven't seen that.
Me?
Yeah.
I watch that every year. I've watched it every year as long as I have Memories okay. of watching television.
There you go. Me too. Okay, there you go. So, it's really corny, but it's totally true.
Best movie in the world.
Yeah.
Totally I remember one year when I was working at a company, a startup in a different city. I won't even go into it. And I remember there's that part of the movie where George, it's George, right? That's the main.
Yeah.
He goes in and he said, what's the main guy, the bad guy in there?
Mr. You know, in I was just going It's Lionel.
Richie.
Oh, no.
Someone in the chat room has to come back with it. Anyway, I can't believe I forgot. Because, you know, of course, I was just talking about this yesterday to my wife. And this the guy comes in there. And he offers him the cigar, and he says, "Here's this job. I'm going to give you this great job,
Mr. Potter."
Mr. Potter, he's like, "Going to accept the job?" And then he realizes, he makes this realization that, "Wait a minute, you know, I'm dealing
with
the devil."
He's holding that cigar. Here. He sort of throws the cigar back at him, or does he just put the cigar
out? And he kind of wipes his hand after he shook his hand, and he says, "No, I can't do this."
It's the handshake. It's the touching of the flesh. It's after he feels the cold handshake that he goes. Wait a minute.
And that I had that moment. Of course, I had already shaken hands and taken the job and was doing that for a while. But there was that turning point for me where I was like, man, I'm doing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
What do you do when you're doing the wrong thing?
Find another job.
How? You know what you told me once? Mm-hmm. I've said this before on the show. I'll say it again. It bears repeating. And I couldn't wrap my head around it. I'd been working at a startup. The startup imploded. I had no job. And I said this before, I'll say it again. You don't need a job. The employers need you. They need you. You don't need them. They need you. They should be lucky to hire you. And it wasn't, you weren't saying this specifically to me, although you were. The implication was, the employers need people like you. They need the creative people or the talented people. They need people for these jobs. And I remember
absolutely true.
How did you come up with that? How did you know to say that to me?
You know, it's obviously true. I mean, the employer does bring something besides security. They bring the work, right? It's the employer's job to go out and get the work. And without that, your talent doesn't have anything to work on. But I worked in advertising. I worked in lots of things. I was a newspaper guy and I was a musician. But when I was in advertising, the poorest paid people in the shop were the ones who actually earned the money for everyone. I remember working at a .com, and I was supposed to be the creative director. But I didn't feel like I was really being heard or making a difference. I didn't feel like, you know, I felt like I had a nice title, but I didn't have any power really. And I was standing there with like a whole bunch of people, and we were about to get a whole bunch of money because I designed something. And I was just like, why do I need them? That was the thought I had before I started having Happy Club. Why do I need them? I mean, that's a mean thing to say, and I'm sure there were reasons I did need them, but it just looked to me like I was coming up with the ideas and the design and the code, and you're bringing what exactly? And you make how much? And I make how much? Wait a minute. I can compete with you. I can put you out of business. Right? So.
Can shut you down.
I'm going to read a description.
Okay.
And you tell me what the name of the movie is.
Okay.
With a dead body laying between them, two men wake up in the secure lair of a serial killer who's been nicknamed the Jigsaw. The men must follow rules and objectives if they wish to survive and win the deadly game set for them. Is it the King's Speech?
It's like the Saw 18 or...
The Social Network? Or A Beautiful Mind?
I would say none of the above.
Correct.
It's like the Saw 8 or something.
The aging patriarch of an organized crime dynasty transfers control of his clandestine empire to his reluctant son.
Batman.
Mystic River, The Shawshank Redemption, Fight Club, or Titanic?
None of the above.
Correct. It's The Godfather.
Why are you, why are you reading these?
I went to the IMDb to try to find out more about Mr. Potter, and then I got distracted. We're, usually we do this show with live video, and so I can look at you, and I'm not distracted. But my eyes have to have something to do.
Right, I hear
you. Your eyes have to have something to do.
Sure.
Yeah, so It's a Wonderful Life, directed by Frank Capra, written by Francis Goodridge, Albert Hackett, and four more credits.
Movie didn't even do well when it came out. Did you know that?
Bombed. People didn't like it.
Do you think Groundhog Day is going to be that kind of movie? Like, it's a cult following now. Do you think people will be watching Groundhog Day? I think Groundhog Day is one of the most important movies of my life.
I like Knocked Up.
Which one is that?
Couple gets drunk, incompatible people get drunk, have meaningless sex.
Is the blonde, is this She's with the pregnant. One with the blonde? And the obnoxious guy?
Yes. And they decide to get married and give it a go.
It was a cute movie.
It
didn't feel like an important movie the way Groundhog Day does.
Okay. I can accept that. I think my point was just that we don't really... If your company isn't being run well, you don't need them. If the company's being run well, then... And has a vision that you can buy into, then you should keep, you know, then maybe you should keep working there because it's a place you can grow. And it's a place that's doing something that you believe in. But if you don't believe in what the company's doing, then you should get out of there because you can get a better job or you can make one for yourself because you got skills.
I like that. I like ending on that note.
Let's do it.
So we will be resuming our regular schedule.
Okay.
I'm asking.
That sounds good.
Okay. I'm working on getting all of my computers are in a box in a storage facility in Orlando. And I won't have them back until mid-July. All of them, except
why? Why won't you have them tomorrow?
Because they're in a storage facility in Orlando.
You can go to Orlando and get them out of it.
Well, no, I don't have access. It's owned by the moving company.
So basically, once you have a house.
Yeah, they won't come here until the moving truck is loaded and starts driving. Because I had only anticipated needing 2 weeks. So I said, well, you know, 2 weeks of you know, sort of a weird show schedule, no big deal. Well, it turns out you can't always be that optimistic.
Yeah, but you sound good.
It's the microphone.
So what?
It's just the microphone.
Nice, but what I mean is, you sound like you know what you got to do next, and you're on top of things.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm mostly dead, but yeah. But so it's a waiting game. So in instead of being able to do four guests like I can usually do, I can do one, which is in this case you.
Okay.
Not really a guest. You're a co-host. But if you substitute the word non-local entities, I could usually do four or five.
Right.
Now I can only do one because I only have a certain mixer and I only have a certain... And it was like a contingency plan. It's like this. It's like if you said, here's a perfect way to think of this. Let's say I know you're a big camper. You love to go camping. Let's say to a buddy, hey, man, let's go camping. And I say, okay, how long are you gonna? Well, here's what we'll do: we'll drive up to the trail, and what we'll do is we'll have our backpacks, and we'll pack everything we need, and we'll do a 3-day camping trip. What we'll do is we'll hike the whole first day, we'll make our tent that night, we'll sleep there, we'll have the whole second day to just hunt, whatever you do when you're camping. I don't know.
Who am I again?
This is you. And then that night you'll stay, and then you'll hike back out of the woods for the next day. Well, let's say you do that. So how much stuff are you going to bring? You're going to bring just what you need those days. You're not going to bring anything extra because you're carrying it on your back. You're not, right. You can't put it down. You
can't put your piano on your back.
Right. So you take just what you need for the hike in, the one day of camping. You're not even going to bring all the food because you know that you can fish and you can hunt wild boar. And whatever else you do when you're camping, and that's it. Well, then let's say the day that you get there, the forecast is clear skies, 72 degree weather. Absolutely nothing could mess this up. It's the best time of year. And as you're hiking out there, some kind of meteor hits and the skies go dark and it causes an eruption and the trails in and out are obliterated. You have no way to communicate with the outside world. And now you know, because you happen to, be the kind of person that studies what happens when a meteor hits, you know that it will take 2 months before the air clears and you can get out, but all you have is that stuff that you put in your bag. That's kind of like our situation, it's a little worse.
You've got the alien probing happening too.
Really? Is this, should I remember?
I remember I was waiting for that part.
No. So it's like that. We came here planning for a week or two, and instead it's going to be about 2 months. So at least the end is in sight. At least I have a target goal now. So as far as when we get to do more shows with our guests that we've sort of scheduled, part of that is to do with infrastructure. Now, a friend of mine said, you can borrow my Mac. You can borrow mine. You can use it. And it's a MacBook Air, and it doesn't have all the right outputs. So, it's like that. So I'm working on getting another computer loaner. And once I have that, and Deb, please don't email me offering yours. I wouldn't do that. But I'm working on getting one from somebody. And maybe once that happens, then we can have guests back on the show. That'll be soon, I hope.
Guests like Robert Scoble.
Yeah. But so next week, though, we will be doing a show. Are you in town? You around? You want to do one?
I am in town. I do want to do one.
Let's do one. So regular, it'll be up on the schedule, 5x5.tv/schedule.
3 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Texas.
Yep.
Actually, doesn't Texas cross two time zones? I believe it does.
No.
It's big, though.
It is its own sort of country.
It's called Mexico.
They have scorpions here. I haven't seen one.
We stole it from Mexico. I'm going to make a lot of Texans mad, but we really did steal it from Mexico.
I don't have any knowledge about that. But what
and
I do
California,
know...
In California, we stole from Mexico.
Okay. Well, that I know. So anyway, have a great week, Jeffrey.
You too, my friend.
Take care. Thanks very much to Omnigroup.com and Simplecasts for making this show possible. Thanks to everybody for listening. You can follow Jeffrey on Twitter at Zeldman. I'm on Twitter at Dan Benjamin. And please do be sure to check out 5x5.tv. We've got a whole host of new shows in case this is the only one you listen to that we would love for you to go and check out. Please consider rating the show on iTunes. It really is the absolute best way for new people to find out about the show. Thanks very much for tuning in. We'll see you all again next week.